Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, August 3rd, 2016, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is 73 degrees and pretty sunny here in upstate New York. It looks like it's going to be a pretty nice day. So I have a treat for you today. We're not going to look at autonomous weapons or hate speech algorithms today. We have a special guest, Mr. Clint Richardson. Is finally here to join us. I know it's kind of been my fault. I've been promising for a long time that I was going to try and get Clint's opinion on a lot of the things we talk about, but my summer has been kind of buried being tour guide for my little munchkins. So, Clint, good morning. Welcome from the early hours of Utah.
Greetings. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thanks for coming on. So we've been hearing you on Sundays every once in a while, sitting in for Shally, which has been a huge treat. I know people have missed you since you have left doing your daily radio show. How's that been going in having more free time?
I certainly am. It's been it's been good and bad. You know, you always are going to miss that sort of that platform, that pedestal you can stand on and yell at people to wake the hell up and, hey, here's what's going on. But you also start to realize that a lot of the folks around you doing the same thing are saying the opposite of what you're saying without any evidence to back up what they're saying. And so it gets a little monotonous trying to have to explain things over and over again when you're coming from the disposition, the perspective, you know, that you're in a free country, for instance, and that, you know, the patriotism model and all that stuff. And, you know, I understand that. Everybody kind of has to go through and realize that that's part of the control structure. But it just gets hard after a while trying to explain the law to people when your perspective is that, you know, you're free and yet you're under the law. You're free, but you're under the law, right? It just, there's a lot of disconnect out there, I think. And I always said that was my goal, was to take away that disconnect, to take away that disposition that people have. I figured out that what people are really living in is a state of dishonesty. You know, dis, the word dis is a word that is used by Dante, you know, or excuse me, in Dante's Inferno, through the layers of hell, you know, dis is actually the word of the devil. And so when you think of the word dis and you put it on any word, disposition, dishonesty, dis this, it's always a sort of an adversarial, i.e. satanic or negative concept. And so when we live in a state of dishonesty, I think it's one of the veils we have to pierce to go to the next step, is to realize that everything we do is in some form of dishonesty. We call it fiction, we call it the artifice, you know, we call it the straw man, whatever we're doing, we're living in a state of dishonesty. So that means that we're being honest, we're being sincere, but that our truth is manufactured. It's something we agree on, or that's culturally viable, or it gets us through the day. It makes us feel better about our jobs, even though we work for Raytheon or some weapons manufacturer or a bank, right, that we hate. We live in a state of dishonesty, meaning we're honest about the lie. We believe in the lie so much that we feel that we're being honest about it. I'm patriotic, I'm this, I'm that. And that's what I really found, was this sort of sense of dishonesty, the sense of justification, constant need for people to justify their actions in a society that is utterly sick, that is utterly destitute of any moral compass whatsoever. And that was one of the reasons I finally said, hey, look, if I stay in this much longer, you know, doing this every day, the only thing I have left to do is expose people as the frauds they are. All my, you know, a lot of my radio show hosts that were my, you know, on the same station. I started, you know, revealing people's for what they were. And that sort of got a little bit monotonous, I think, for both the station owner and for myself and for my listeners who appreciated it. But at the same time, it's like, man, you know, everything's a lie.
It's true, though. I mean, as you pull on the threads that stick out of the sweater, the sad fact of the matter is every thread you pull on is going to start unraveling the sweater.
Yeah, and they're all connected.
Yeah, they're all connected, exactly. I know it's disturbing. You know, I do 5 days a week. I'm going on, the network's anniversary is this month. It'll be 4 years, and I did a year at Orion before, so it's got to be close to 5 years I've been doing radio now, and I'm really at that point where, you know, you've dug into so much and looked at so many things, and everything you look at is connected to all this big, ugly ball of the last few hundred years, potentially even further back than that, of just everything we've been told is completely false. It's a narrative. It's been constructed for you to fit into, and I don't want to be a part of it anymore, honestly.
Yeah, and that's the hard part, because you don't want to be a part. It's not even a matter of not wanting to be a part of it. It's a matter of actually physically preventing yourself from being a part of it, because you see it for what it is. You know, it's that concept of the Matrix. You don't want to be plugged back into the Matrix once you see it. But the problem is, and I think they you know, they kind of hint at this in the movie, is that, which, you know, is, I've said my piece about what the Matrix movie is compared to what its sources are, which is very important. But, you know, what they say and what they show is that, you know, we don't really like to take adults, people who've reached the age of basically acceptance and consent, to that artificial structure, that system, the words, the language, everything else. They don't like to pull people out of the Matrix, out of the simulation or the simulacrum, because they can't handle it. And that's really what I've been going through, is a profound sense of sadness, a profound sense of heartbreak, because, and you know, I look at the Bible says that's what you have to go through. You don't have a choice. If you're going to wake up, if you're going to come out of this thing, you have to see things for what they are. You have to recognize, quote unquote, the devil wherever it exists. Anything artificial, anything fictional, everything. You can't pick and choose. You have to see it for what it is. That is a sense of being, you know, heartbroken, that utopia sits there. Utopia having the meaning of being in the middle of nowhere, in other words, the middle of nature that's untouched by man. You see heaven all around, and it's covered by these asphalt jungles, these buildings, these horribly, horribly anti-nature, anti-God, if you will, structures that we've built all around us. And so it's that sense of being heartbroken at seeing this just unlimited expansion to no end and no purpose. I think you have to go through that. The problem is that once you're at that age, like it portrays in the movie, you know, you're not going to handle it well. A child can handle it. A child still has his sense of imagination and hasn't necessarily distinguish between what is imaginary and what is real, and so he can still be taught what is real. But to teach yourself to see and recognize what is real compared to what is fiction as an adult is very, very, very difficult, because you've been impressed and trained to see it even though it's not there, to see value in things according to money even though there is no such thing as value. Evaluation, it doesn't exist. It's not a self-evident fact or self-existent, i.e. creation of God, depending on how you want to phrase it, right? You got to realize that if people are really going to wake up, they're going to have to go through a major depression, because literally that's what you're doing. You're depressing yourself. You're taking off all of the comforts, the clothing. You know, you're becoming that emperor without clothes. You're seeing things for what they are. And it's a really difficult thing. It's beautiful. You see nature for the first time. You respect life, perhaps, even for the, all life, even spiders, for the first time, right? But you also, at the same time, you see this cancerous growth that, of man's designs and imaginations that are just destroying the very thing that actually would sustain us. You know, I don't like to use words like sustain for obvious reasons, but I mean, the shoe fits here.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's pretty much what I've been going through. You know, the last, I would say, 5 years or so has been kind of like there's been a full death and kind of recovery now, once you've accepted the fact that that utopia that you had been taught to hope for in the future isn't coming, and we are being set up for a dystopia. You know, it really, I've been spending a lot of time this summer in the woods, you know, because that connection is so important, and we don't have that anymore, and that's what makes me very sad.
That's why you go to the woods. You go to the woods to go to utopia. Utopia is not something that man builds. Utopia is where man is not, where man has not intruded, and so once you step into nature in its purest form, you are reaching utopia. That's why you go there, and it's why you feel the way you feel when you go there. You have to understand, utopia is not an utopia. Utopia comes from the Latin. It means topiary, as in a garden, right? It's why we refer to the Garden of Eden, etc. You're not talking about something that you're going to build. You're talking about something that is purely a protective model. You're talking about when you're building a society and you want it to be utopian, you're talking about something that is as close as possible to undisturbing the flow and energy and force of nature. In other words, you're not touching God. You're not trying to improve on God. You're trying to live in the best way possible amongst nature. That is the trick. That's the thing. You know, it's basically the opposite of how we think. We are always, you know, searching for the rabbit hole. We're always looking to go down the rabbit hole. Blah, blah. But in fact, we tripped into the rabbit hole when we were born. We were thrown down that hole in a hard way, man. We're all bruised and battered. We're still looking for that damn hole. We never look up to see that we're already in the rabbit hole. The freaking nature in its purest form is right there. It's right outside of our city or corporate limits. We just, you know, that's the trick. The trick is to realize that utopia is what we haven't touched yet. And that's a very difficult perspective to have when you're taught all your life you know, to be clear-cutting and improving, and that weeds are evil, right? The actual natural growth is evil, and all the, you know, these kinds of animals, these kinds of bugs, let's use Monsanto poison on it, when you grow up with that mentality, which we all have, it's very difficult to come back and actually say, wow, I have a complete respect for all life. Even the life that I don't like, even mosquitoes, which they're talking about eradicating, which is patently insane, because then what's that going to do? What are bats going to do? What are certain birds going to do when there's no mosquitoes? No fish. Where's that food supply going to go? Oh, I'm sorry that it's annoying you, but you're trying to improve on the design of whatever, the creation, whatever word you want to use. Again, you're trying to destroy that utopia that already exists. And we're well on our way to doing just that. We're well on our way to getting to the point where we can never find utopia because we've already destroyed it.
Well, you know, and that's the most frightening part, and that's a lot of what I spend the show on, is just looking at how disturbing it is at this point with synthetic biology and these lunatics running the show, how they are creating this quote-unquote utopia that they tell us that we need because, you know, we've destroyed the natural world and biology around us. And so here's the new and improved version of, you know, whatever we're releasing, which genie it is we're releasing out of the bottle now, and it'll be good for us and our children in the future. And it just, it really, you know, exactly what you said about having a new respect for life, even down to spiders and mosquitoes. And, you know, where are the ethics? We've completely, I mean, literally just 6 months ago, they were having ethical discussions on being able to CRISPR and genetically modify humans, and how we could never do that because it just was so outside the realm of ethics. And now with the big C cancer dangling in the wind for bazillions of dollars that can be made in the future, now all of a sudden, you know, we not only have the University of Pennsylvania getting ready to CRISPR some of the first humans in December, but we have China now that jumped the gun, and they're ready to start in August. And, you know, and nobody is questioning now the future potential issues that we could run into. I mean, you know, there's just so many ethical issues after this. After they genetically modify the first live human, anything goes. Anything goes.
Yeah, yeah. It's, but see, I mean, that's the problem, man. That's, as far as I understand it, that was done a long time ago. I think that, that what we don't see in the news is probably what we really should be more concerned with, and that what we do see in the news is probably generally a more perfected experiment, if you will. Sorry, my phone's going off. It's a more they've already gone through the kinks, I think, before they actually put it in the news, if you will. So I think that when you see something actually being published and put out there, I think that you're seeing the after effects of the experimental phase going into the sort of intermediate phase, where they can still have a failure, but they're a lot more, you know, you see what I'm saying. We're not seeing it probably even 90% of the horrific shit that's going down in laboratories across the world.
There's lots of dark rooms. Lots and lots of dark rooms. But I'm just saying, I mean, the fact that we've gotten to the point now, you know, there was old school genetic modification utilizing viruses and stuff that we've read about, and you know that they were messing with even back in the days of Plum Island and whatever, but right now we're at the point, you mentioned the GMO mosquitoes with Oxitec, and you know they're utilizing the gene drive on that, and that's CRISPR technology as well, where they can spread a genetic mutation through an entire population and wipe it off the face of the planet. I mean, what right do we have to be deciding what species lives or dies? And just like you said about the bats, I was just saying that the other day. Why aren't we going out to all these communities? You know, all of a sudden now Florida, who was on the top 10 list of, you know, having a Zika emergency, now we have all these cases popping up as they're trying to enable these Zika response teams, right? But, I mean, why weren't they giving them bat boxes down there? Is my big question. Why didn't we go, instead of spraying more pesticides or more larvicides or now, you know, CRISPRing and releasing genetically modified organisms when we haven't done multi-generational studies of releasing these things in the wild, why weren't we giving them bat boxes? Let's, you know, all the bats have died here on the East Coast. Why aren't we double, you know, doing killing two birds with one stone, trying to conserve bats and bring them back to their natural habitat and get rid of mosquitoes?
Well, you're talking about virtually unregulated science at this point. Science is a very, you know, any word when it's put into a title or a name as opposed to an action becomes very dangerous. Religion is one of those words. Government is one of those words. And everybody breaks apart these words. Oh my God, government means mind control. You know, gubernare in the Latin, and mentis means control of the mind or steering or driving the mind. But no one stops to think that that is actually, you know, that's the noun form. That's the legal form. But don't forget, you can also have self-governance. You can have self-government where you're controlling your own mind. So it's not every word is not necessarily bad or good. as a concept, you know, of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, it's a matter of perspective. When you're talking about science, are you talking about the true meaning of science, which is to discover nature's design, to discover as much as possible? And of course, the maxim of science and of law and of the Bible is that you will never in science find source. You will never be able to distinguish as to what is creation, what causes life, what is that force, right? You can do all kinds of things, but you can never discover source. And that's one of the maxims of law, the principles that stem straight out of the Bible. No matter what you do, you're never going to discover source, which is another word for quote-unquote God, if you will. And so science is not science in the notion of men being responsible and ethical and following the scientific method to the point, right, where you're doing things under that and still adhering to the laws of nature. Now, the difference between the laws of nature and the law of nature, the law, singular, is the conduct that is expected by man. That is where your ethics and everything comes from, your morals, your standards, right? That is straight out of the Bible. The laws of nature, plural, are essentially the way things, like I said, the way things are, the structure of things without man's interference, the force of life, the source, that sort of thing. When you have a group of people who create an artificial person, a corporation, that thus has no responsibility for its actions, because we're no longer talking about a man, not talking about something artificial, a structure that has insurance and liability insurance and malpractice insurance and all that stuff. All of a sudden you have a noun, you have a thing, a person, place, or thing that has no ethical, you know, that's the whole reason for creating nations is to avoid, it's the opposite of the natural law, it's the opposite of ethics, it's the opposite of conduct. It's the opposite of the moral and scriptural law. It is literally designed to be anti-nature, anti-God, anti-Christ, whatever word, again, that you want to look at. So what we have are a bunch of corporations and employees of those corporations calling themselves by the flattering title of scientists, which, of course, we're never to respect any flattering title, whether it's scientist, doctor, lawyer, or poor, or wealthy, or any title that you put on anybody. That's the idea of equity, of treating all people as you would have them treat you. Well, if someone has a flattering title, well, then you can't treat them like you'd expect them to treat. So you have this horrific system of artificial persons, corporations, that have permissions, licenses. Another word for license is anarchy. Remember that. License means anarchy, and that specifically means anarchy towards the natural law or respect of any of the what exists, the force of life, the laws of nature, who have license, literally a permission to be anarchical against the laws of nature. That is who is science. That is what science is today. It's a legal entity, and legal means opposed to God or opposed to nature. The laws of nature, the structure, the form, the foundation, the substance, the essence. That is what we're dealing with. So you're looking for ethics. You're looking for reasons why they're doing this, and the reasons why they are doing this is because they might as well be robots. They might as well be mannequins or Frankenstein monsters with no soul and no concept of morals. They're artificial persons. And until you understand that, and that is the greatest sin of all, the respect of persons is the greatest, greatest, most horrific thing you can possibly do, because you're respecting what is fictional, what is artificial. Then your science, your medicine, your pharmacopoeia, which means poisoning and witchcraft, all your industries, when they become corporations, associations, they are going to be necessarily unethical, unmoral. They're not going to, the whole concept is to get away from that which binds us as men, male and female, men, if you will, men of God, or under God's law, which is the natural law. The whole concept of the corporation and the artificial person and the natural person, which is a oxymoron, is to be under the legal law, not the moral or scriptural law, not the foundational law, to get out of that. And that's what you're finding. That's why this is happening, is because no man, no individual man has any grasp or concept of religion anymore, true religion, the verb, the actions of man. No one is responsible for their actions because we have insurances, we have all of these different things. So you should never expect there to be morals or ethics or anything else when it comes to the quote-unquote sciences, because this is not science. This is a name, a title of science. It's two different things. Titles, flattering titles, are always going to lead to quote-unquote evil or something that is against nature, against the design, against utopia, against life itself. And until we understand that, and until we figure that out and do something about it, say, no more corporations. Corporations are inherently evil. They're inherently, obviously, artificial. They're called all of artificial persons. And every chapter in the Bible is against the person, no matter what form, you know, whatever title, surety, insurance, all that shit. Until we get back to that notion, there's a guy, a street preacher in France, that said it best. He said that the reason that we are going to succumb to Islam, the religion and people of Islam, is not because they have power, but because they have religion. They actually will die for their beliefs. They will actually go so far as to die for their beliefs. You show me a man in America or in England or in France that claims to be a Christian, or for that matter any other religion, who will die for their beliefs. Why are they using the whole of the Islamic people to infiltrate all these countries? Because they actually have a culture. They actually have a togetherness. They actually have a foundational law, which is the Quran, in our case it would be the Bible, that is also their civil law. It is how they act. We have a foundational law that we ignore, and we only follow the civil law, which is the law of words, right? Not the unwritten law, but the written law. That's our problem. We can complain, we can sit here, and we can just be grossed out, but we're not doing anything about it. We're not actually being the heroes. We're not going in and turning over those tables of the money changers or of the life changers, the people who are messing with the DNA, the structure of life itself. Why are we not doing something about it? That's the real question. We're sitting from afar, we're talking about it, we're pointing it out, we're doing exactly what we should not be doing, which is relying on the notion that if we expose the information, then something will be done about it. That's just not a true statement. Just because Alex Jones is talking about it, or Clint Richardson's talking about it, or you're talking about it, doesn't mean anything's being done about it. And in my opinion, the entire structure of alternative radio, when it comes to the Joneses and the real, quote-unquote, head honchos out there, the shock jocks, their purpose is information, the info war, information without, disclosure without consequence, disclosure as informed consent. Hey, this is what's happening, and we're not going to do anything about it, but we're going to talk about it, we're going to pretend to be knowledgeable and informed about it, but we're not going to do anything about it. And guess what? All of our evidence is secondhand. It's thirdhand. It doesn't follow the actual chains of custody or the chains of evidence that would be necessary to even take this shit to court and do something about it legally in the legal system. We don't follow anything like that. And I think that is the point. That is the purpose of the alternative quote-unquote media. And now, suddenly, the mainstream media is sort of following suit, is to inform us, to tell us about the crime. The presidential candidates get up and tell each other, or tell us about how criminal each one of them is, and then they say, vote for me, or vote for him, but don't vote for anybody. Don't vote none of the above. But vote. vote for one evil or the other. You see, that's informed consent. We know they're both criminals, but we're going to vote. We know they're both cousins, 11th cousins, but we're going to vote for one of them anyway. See, that is how the information war, if you will, works. It causes us to be inactive. It causes us not to be Christ-like and go in and uproot the tables of the money changers, or in this case, the tables of the quote-unquote false artificial persons called scientists. Instead, we sit back, we watch, as our nature, our very existence is being challenged. And I think that really needs to be people need to start discussing that fact, that we've reached the end of the possibilities of spreading information, and that it's actually time to act according to our moral beliefs. Because I guarantee you, the immoral man will always win over the moral man until the moral man actually acts and is willing to die for his beliefs.
Well, the sad fact of the matter is that as we have the science class that's ruled by corporations, I mean, they've moved right into governance, and we are at a point right now at this election where I think now more than ever, we are about ready to see a complete and utter clampdown on, I mean, I call it mad science gone mad. We've been sold to Big Pharma as an R&D line item budget for them to be able to test all these new technologies on anybody and anything as a part of this new 21st Century Cures Act and the precision healthcare and all these other things that are going to fuel the new 21st century economy. And so how do you separate that when you're trying to explain to people the complete and utter destruction of all we hold dear in a utopia, the world that is ending around us in regards to biology 1.0, but on the other hand, to move us out of biology 1.0 to the new 21st century medicine and technologies is going to be the economy of the future. I mean, how do you sell the masses on the fact that all of this is completely out of window as far as ethics and the future of our children and for our future good as a species? I mean,
my conclusion is that you cannot sell anything until people understand that the Bible is actually the foundation of all law. It is actually said to be, even though they call it the unwritten law, it is the common law or the foundation of the common law, and everything else is built on top of that. If you're not following the law of nature, not respecting nature as creation, if you will, and that you are a part of that entity that we call God, the whole of nature, all of existence, if you don't respect the fact that you're a part of that and you start destroying that which your foothold is upon, well then, yeah, you're breaking the foundational fundamental law. And until people realize, I think, that the Bible, you know, any researcher worth his salt, in my opinion, will always end up back at the Bible. You will find out eventually, you can't get around it if you do enough research, that the Bible is the source of all law. It's not a religion, it's a law that you follow religiously. Again, that's a verb, not a foundation, not a corporation like all churches are. It's the law. We're not following the law, and we're allowing governments around the world, nations to, which are their design, to go completely against the law. This is why you always have church and state, or the moral law and the legal law, because they're diametrically opposed to each other. Everything legal is always opposed to everything natural. It's always artifice. It's always something that is false, a lie that is told and made a truth, or confirmed and ratified to be a truth. Right? So until people, you know, this is why I don't have a lot of hope that anything is going to change, because until people actually embrace the Bible for what it actually and truly is, until they realize that it's the very foundation of law, and it's the only thing that's going to defeat the legal system, because it's always the highest law, right? Until people know that, until people get that and get away from religion where you go to church every Sunday in a part of a corporation, which again is an artificial person against the Bible, and start acting religiously according to the law, which again, if you read the Bible and you really truly understand it, there's hardly anything religious about it. It's something that you follow in a religious capacity, meaning that you follow it without error, without allowing yourself to be tempted by getting license or anarchy against it. That's the trick. See, that's the hard part. That's the point where I say, okay, I can see why no one's going to get to this point, because we're brainwashed into demonizing the Bible along with the church, even though the church is completely opposed to the Bible. All churches, doesn't matter which one, they're corporations. You can't get around that. They're artificial persons. So until people actually, again, get back to that respect of nature, the respect of the laws or the force of life itself, and stop messing with it and stop allowing others to do it, well, then you can't expect a change. You can't expect anything to happen. You can only essentially follow the path yourself, hope others will follow, and it says few will be able to enter that kingdom of heaven. Well, heaven is earth. Heaven is utopia. Heaven is the middle of nowhere that man, you know, but we're all in hell. We're all living in a legal fiction, a place of artifice, a place where anything goes. You gotta find heaven. That's the trick. Heaven is all around you. It's not like that you can't find it. What it is not, though, is some place that you go after this life. Afterlife is not in the Bible. The word afterlife, folks, is not in the Bible. Get that through your heads. This is not a book about some afterlife experience. This is life itself. It doesn't even make sense that the Bible's about an afterlife. Why would you need it in this life, right? Nothing about the church model makes sense. And when you read the Bible, you find out that that's very true. And so we've been taught to hate the church. It's the point of the church, I think. Again, sort of like the point of the alternative media is to get you to hate the church. And because you hate the church, you hate the Bible. Even though the Bible is completely separate and opposed to the church and to the state, you're supposed to hate the Bible when the Bible is actually the foundation of the entire structure of law for all nations that call themselves quote-unquote Christian, which is, again, a whole other subject. But I think the other thing that we have to talk about here is the intent of these people. Now, wherever that intent comes from, Jules, you know, that's a whole other discussion. Is it just pure evil? Is it in our genes? Is it brain parasites? Is it brainwashing? Well, let's talk about what their goal is. Why? What have they been working towards? Well, Jonas Salk, he wrote his book. His book was The Unfolding of Man. The Unfolding of Man. Well, let me read you the definition of evolution. Why have they taught us evolution? Why did evolution come around in the 1800s when science was just starting to come around? Because they figured out that they could do things to people or animals, and they could change. They could unfold the very structure of life itself and evolve it. And so the word evolution is the act of unfolding or unrolling, a series of things unrolled or unfolded. Well, hey, I got news for you. That's the definition of what prions are. Mm-hmm. Prions are proteinaceous, whatever the prion actually means. I can't remember at this point, but they're proteins without a nucleotide, right? They bond together, and when you have an infectious prion, which is actually a healthy prion from an animal or a plant or anything else, it attaches to your body, your healthy prions, your healthy protein structure, and starts evolving it, unfolding it. Now, the only way that can happen is if you are injecting, literally stinging people, and putting foreign DNA, foreign proteins, foreign prions into the body. It cannot happen any other way. there's people that still say eating beef can get you prion disease. I don't agree with that at all. Perhaps, maybe, if you have a leaky gut, I guess. But no, it has to be a direct bodily injection to bypass all of those healthy switches and healthy defense mechanisms in your body. So, you know, to evolve means to roll, to unfold, to open and expand. So you got to understand that what these guys are doing, when Jonas Salk wrote his The Unfolding of Man, speaking of, you know, vaccines and infectious viruses and proteins, his other book was, in fact, Infectious Molecules and Human Disease, Man Unfolding being the first one. And then you look and you see that Salk himself says nearly all polio outbreaks since 1961 were caused by the oral polio vaccine. The guy who created the oral polio vaccine says official data shows that large-scale vaccination has failed to obtain any significant improvement of the diseases against they were supposed to provide protection, and that 90% of polio cases are basically, vaccine-related, that cancers, leukemias, and all those come from the vaccines, all these different congressional hearings. You start to think about this, and you say, well, okay, so their goal wasn't necessarily to prevent disease. It was to evolve the disease, evolve man's capacity to hold disease. Charles Darwin's books were The Origin of Species, but a year before he wrote The Origin of Species, he wrote The Descent of Man. What does the word descent mean? The act of passing from a higher to a lower place, an inclination downward, as in from a higher to lower order of being. Transmission by succession or inheritance. Well, how do you get around inheritance? You inject it right into the body. So you're talking about lowering or evolving, unfolding man again. So what I'm trying to say is that science has been sort of geared toward the notion of evolution. Most people think evolution is a natural occurrence, if they believe in it at all. The truth is that evolution occurs when man interferes with the designs of man or creatures or animals, just like utopia ends once man steps foot into nature and starts moving things around and designing things and imagining things. Well, that's when evolution happens to the human bodies, is when you start messing with it. So we're being evolved. The question is it's not a religious question, it's not a scientific question, it's not a debate. We're being frickin' evolved. It's called prion science. It's literally what they've been doing. So it's the cause of all disease. The other aspect where the unfolding or the evolution of man is used is the Educational Policy Research Center, which says that basically material gathered from education, religion, medicine, and related fields comprise this practical approach to dealing with human development. So in other words, altering the mind. This unity transcends the seemingly diverse intentions of education, psychiatry, and religion, and creates, they have an ambition, it says, to create a unified science and art of human change. Their procedures would contribute to the unfolding of man. It says the unity of secular and religious views concerning the process of unfolding of man and the unity of various methods of achieving human growth. So literally the education system, the religions, the secular and the spiritual are being forced into one consensus type of aspect, to where we're even, you know, we, our religion, our education, our science, our medicines are all coming to the same consensus-based, you know, structure, which is the unfolding of man, the evolution of man into some form that is not his original or his source. And honestly, if you look at the true way that man can truly be controlled is when man is no longer man, when man is so chock full of changes, of unfolding things, that his genes are no longer recognizable as the creation of God, they're now the creation of man. And at that point, man can only patent and copyright his own invention. He cannot patent nature. So what you're seeing, in my opinion, is the creation of a slave race. How do you create a slave race where you're born a slave and you can do nothing about it? Well, if I'm born with the patented property, the patented genomic structure of man instead of God, i.e. nature, what I'm supposed to be, my source, well then, I'm born a slave. And you can enslave the entire world, the entire vegetable and mineral kingdom out there, by simply changing and altering everything that you see into a form that can be patented. So, in my opinion, that's what I see happening. We are talking about literally the forced evolution of man into a point and a structure where we are property. That's the foundation or the design behind all the madness.
And I think even beyond property, I would say property that was easily controllable and able to be monitored, able to be switched on and off at will. I mean, yep. When you look at places like the Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering, that's exactly what they're doing, is they're looking at nature and they're physically copying what they're finding. And then we were just doing a story here probably a week or two ago that talked about directed evolution, and that's pretty much what they're doing right now, is they are specifically evolving biology for their own purposes. And, you know, evolution has happened naturally, but at a very, very, very slow pace over millennia. And now we're seeing, there was an interview with a scientist that I had listened to back, a month or so ago, talking about how throughout the history of the planet, statistically speaking, evolution had happened on a very slow scale compared to maybe the last 100 years or so, and we really are in a fast forward right now for all kinds of organisms to be evolving. And it's our external influences and all these things that they're putting into our environment. And like you're even saying, I mean, once you start looking into epigenetics and being able to be influenced by the situations that maybe your ancestors lived through, and even being your genes being affected by things such as stress or being poor when you grew up or whatever, you start to see very quickly that we are being evolved to a point of total and utter submission on a mental level. You know, our structure, societal structure, is evolving us to be non-independent, right? Dependent upon the state for anything. I mean, the fact that we can't even hunt and gather or think for ourselves anymore has to be evidence of that. But once we get to the biological evolution, where, I don't know if you saw this new shape-shifting immune system that they've been tinkering with, that actually goes in and starts changing your DNA, and it'll mutate, so any pathogen that comes out of the blue, never before seen, our bodies will be able to deal with. You know, once we get to that point where they have been able to capture and control every DNA strand and cell within our body, you know, we have become enslaved by the evil who are trying to recreate life in their own image.
Well, in my opinion, what you're talking about is taking the mark, that notion of taking the mark that shows that you are a beast of burden. You know, the beast concept is every one of us is a beast, an animal, a soulless being. What you're talking about, interestingly, is the same thing I've been trying to explain for years, is the notion of personhood. So right now we carry our ID, we carry the driver's license, we carry the functionality that shows that we are property of government, in citizenship and subjection to government. At that point, when the genes, when they can actually assign us a personality and assign us a code, if you will, through epigenetics and through your basic medical, you know, pharmaceutical, scientific, you know, structure, at that point, you no longer will need to carry around your person. You will be wearing you'll be infected by personhood. You will have the proprietary property of government embedded in your very DNA, your very body. You cannot deny personhood at that point. You cannot deny being property of government, and therefore your performance debt to government, your contract, is literally assumed the second that you are born into nature. That's the problem with this, is that it's changing something that's voluntary, personhood, that is identity, into something that, for all intents and purposes, is involuntary, because the law recognizes that the child always follows the status of the father or the mother, depending on the system of law. So, I mean, if you're born genetically altered, then you are automatically a property, and you will be named and numbered, and just like any livestock out there. So I think that we really have to start considering that is our dystopian future, no matter how you look at it, unless you start realizing that it's time to fight back. I'm sorry, but there's no peaceful solution here. There's, you know, it's one thing to say I'm going to walk the righteous path, but what happens when there's no path left to walk? What happens when there's no place left to go? You have no land. Everything's been stolen from you already. Where the hell are you going to go? It's time to actually fight. I'm sorry, but in my opinion, we are infested. Whether it's purely brainwashing and drugs that have destroyed the empathy of our leaders or scientists or whatever, a whole sect of people. Maybe we're the minority out here that still do empathize. I don't know, but what is the purpose? Why have the empathy if you're not going to use it? Why? What are we doing? What exactly, seriously, man, what are we doing? What are we doing? We're just talking. It's just, it's not working. That's all I can say.
I guess the hard part about this is what's happening is so difficult for people to even grasp. And I think it's because the programming has been so complete. I mean, you can put evidence all day long in front of rational people, and half the time they won't even look at it because it's completely against what they've been taught to believe. And so, I mean,
well, so consider this as well. Just to sort of put a capstone on that discussion about evolution. One of the greatest finds or the greatest contemplations that I've had recently, why prions are so important, is actually the prion functionality of every living organism on Earth proves that Darwin's theory of natural evolution is actually false. Now, I did not say that evolution could not be forced, but, you know, even by, you know, great changes in the environment, evolution could be forced. Or when man starts tinkering with the body, you know, you can evolve the body. They've proven that. The problem that we have, though, is that we have a prional structure. These prions, in their healthy, natural form, surround the cells, surround all of the different functions of the body, and they are what prevent cancers. They prevent growths that shouldn't be happening. They prevent disease. They prevent viral infection. That's the importance of the prional structure. Now, what happens when we have an infectious prion enter our body? For instance, the scrappy from sheep, the prion, which is a healthy sheep prion, right? Coming into our body and starts reprogramming or unfolding our, evolving our own prional structure so that it can no longer protect the human body. It becomes an antibody against the human structure. So that actually, in a nutshell, proves that human and goat, or human and cow, or human and monkey, DNA and RNA, the structure, the programming of the species, if you will, cannot be mixed, cannot evolve from one to the other, because we are literally allergic to each other. I cannot put a cow or a monkey prion into my body without the you know, either my prion or the human prion or the ape or whatever prion trying to reprogram the structure to look more like an ape or look more like a human or look more like a blade of grass. That's the incredible sort of aha moment I had that said, aha, you know, that shows me that evolution is something that has to be forced. It's unfolding of the very structure that makes us human. So evolution does not happen in nature. It happens by nature.
Oh no, I think we've run out of time! Wednesday, and I'll catch up with you tomorrow. Everyone take care.